hurricanes have been battering the southeast United States for weeks. Hurricanes of immense power sweeping ashore with unimaginable winds and force that leave in their path destruction of homes, destruction for moments of hope, destruction of hearts, destruction of lives. People have lost their homes, they've lost family, they've lost friends, being swept away with power that is just unimaginable. We could not make it up if we didn't see it. Winds of 140, 150, 160 miles an hour, multiplied by their cyclonic effect by turning in circles, sweeping over and over and over again. And our science so far does not completely understand the process of how billions of tons of water are picked up and carried around, leaving death and destruction. A hurricane heads for one area and all of a sudden it turns left, it turns right, it turns north, it turns south. And we can't predict. All we can do is stand there and hope, dare I say pray, not me, not here, not now, that chaos is all around us. And there are times when those hurricanes seem to have a mind of their own. They head for one area and then they pivot and turn. How difficult it must be for people not to feel the need for some control. My prayers, my supplications will turn the hurricane. Please, God, not here, not now. Over there, someplace else, someone else, not me. It's very human. It's not an evil impulse. It's very human. We don't want to be simply victims and passive in the midst of such unimaginable force, such amazing chaos that is created by these winds, by these rains, by these storms. And those hurricanes out there are also hurricanes of hope, showing humanity sometimes at our best. Yes, there's terrible destruction, and there are people who act badly. There are people who will gouge in order to sell water and food. There are people who will loot. But one of the things that these disasters do is make neighbors of neighborhoods and make friends of strangers, because when these people, homeless and frightened, come together on the floor of a high school gymnasium or in Florida or a shelter in Arkansas, and they know in those moments that they are fellow riders of the wind, that they have been subject to forces of nature, and that it is good not to be alone in such seeming chaos, that it is good to be together, to hold each other, to cry, to laugh, to pray, to rejoice at life. We look, a home is swept away, another home is not touched, a family is swept away, another family is wet and cold, but just hallelujah, kind of grateful to be alive, and they wonder at why. I don't have answers to the why, but I do know that coming in out of that storm, out of that chaos, and being together gives us hope, gives us a sense that we are not alone in the chaos of the universe, but we face it and fight it and accept it and yell at it and sing at it and pray at it together. Those hurricanes, physical hurricanes of water releasing powers of hundreds of atomic weapons in their mass, are not the only hurricanes in our lives. There are hurricanes of war, throughout the world that are human-made. There are hurricanes of greed and avarice, hurricanes of violence and hurricanes of hatred, to which we are not passive victims and witnesses, but can be active participants. Everyone talks about the weather, but there's not much you can do about it. There are some things we can do about the hate in the world, the hunger in the world, the despair in the world. We can't conquer it. There is no lasting peace. But we come together to remind each other that we are not helpless and we are not hopeless. And even when the sun is not visible through the clouds of wind and rain and rage and chaos and despair, nonetheless, as that anthem describes, we believe in the sun. We believe in the return of light. And we believe that we can be of service to the light. It's a big, complicated, chaotic world, those hurricanes. Especially when you're in the middle of them. It's very hard to have perspective when you're being blown about in 145-mile-an-hour winds with the rain coming at you parallel and pushing you off course. But when we see the miracle of satellite pictures of those hurricanes, they're not chaos. They are, in a certain terrible way, beautiful. They are organized in this amazing circle. And as we look down and we see the hole in the center of it, the eye of that storm, the eye of that hurricane, we see that while you're in the middle of that hurricane, it is complete disorganized, fear-inducing chaos. But from another viewpoint, from another perspective, as we stand apart and above, we can see something majestic. We don't have to love the consequences of those hurricanes, but there is a terrible beauty in the power of nature. There is order from some perspective in the chaos of reality. And that, too, is part of how we lead our lives, looking for that order and looking for some sense of the terrible beauty that is life, that is love, that is hope, that is in being together. When you look at that whirlwind, when you look at those cyclones and those tornadoes that have been spawned by it, when you look at all those things, you can understand poetically God's response to Job. When Job complained, "I've done everything right and everything is going wrong in my life, why?" The response in the Bible always troubled me because it was, I thought, non-responsive. Job says, "I did everything right, I played by the rules, and look what you've done to me. You've gotten rid of my family, you've gotten rid of my herds, you've gotten rid of all these things. God, explain yourself." And God, using a voice of Jack Nicholson that I can't do, is, you know, "The truth, you can't handle the truth." But God says, "Where were you when I created out of the whirlwind?" Well, when I was looking at the whirlwind on the satellite picture, I began to kind of understand that whirlwind metaphor. The power of nature is so enormous, and we cannot understand when we're in the middle of it. But there are times when we come together to try to find the perspective and sense a larger pattern in the chaos. That answer in Job starts to become at least a stimulus for thought and for contemplation. I began to understand how in the Hindu religion they can worship a goddess of destruction, Kali, because destruction and creation are not opposites. They are part of the same process. That the tearing down is a precondition for the building up. And that chaos and order, destruction and creation are not all separate boxes unrelated to one another, but are as linked in nature and in our lives as summer, fall, winter, and spring. The cyclone and the cycle operate together in our lives, inside at the smallest unit, and outside in that large world. There is all of this chaos. We come together on Sundays and think we're sitting still. Some of you are, kind of. Some are looking at your watches, some are shaking them. It doesn't help with the battery-operated ones, the mechanical ones, okay. But of course, we're not sitting still. We are in a world that spins at about 18,000 miles per hour. We're on a world that orbits the sun while it is spinning itself. We are in a solar system that orbits around a galaxy. We are in a galaxy that is racing away from the Big Bang that created us all. Everything is in movement, in flux, turning and spinning like whirling dervishes. But we come together out of all of the chaos out there to find for a moment some intuition of stillness, some sense of order, some moment of peace, some experience of being in the eye of the hurricane that we cannot stop and would not stop. The walls around that eye spin and spin, and for a moment, for us on Sundays, for others on Fridays or on Saturdays, we come for a moment of peace. It's interesting that our second hymn today was, the words were from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman, if you look there, lived to be 41 years old and became a wise old sage for his 41st birthday. He had a remarkable insight and observation. He said that the chaos out there in the world simply replicates the chaos in here. Wow. We look at the wars out there and we are aghast. And we look at the tumult of an election process and the anger and so far not armed wars of political conflict in this country. We look at the conflicts at our workplaces. We look at the conflicts in our own homes. Our terrible need to be right, to be self-justified, to win, to conquer, to conquest. And it's all the same struggle. I think that he was right. From the largest macro level of galaxies colliding to the immediate level of how we lead our lives in communities, in churches, in temples, in mosques, in ashrams. Yes, even in ashrams. Don't get overly sentimental about ashrams. People are people, and we bring and all of the conflict that we also project out there in the world. And it's not simply here at this seemingly micro level, but truly at the micro level. Because inside our bodies are warring cells and urges and impulses. There are cells that are called to action to go fight off an infection. There are T cells that rebel and say, I'm not following orders. That thing looks like a stranger to me. Our immune systems are the ultimate xenophobes. They go after things that sometimes should be there. It's called allergy and autoimmune. At the very smallest level, there are rebellions going on and conflicts and galaxies colliding with each other. What is cancer? Cancer is the ultimate aggressor. battling the immune system to the death. All around us, from the smallest cellular level and below to the largest galaxy, there is tumult and turmoil. And we would find, by coming together, as human beings have always come together in the storm, the solace of good company. The knowledge that we are not alone in our lives, our deaths, and our struggles. We would hold each other and heal each other and help each other. We would share. Last week was about water, for the most part sweet water. But today I want to talk just a bit about salt water, because we come from the sea. We come from those ancient oceans, and we carry those oceans with us. And do you know there are some scientists who believe that the reason that we kiss is for salt? Now, I know some of you are on sodium-restricted diets, and I'm not... And so I'm telling you just to practice safe kissing medically. But we were not always in such a sodium-enriched environment. Salt was pretty important. If you know your Indian history, you'll know how important salt was to the independence of India and to Mahatma Gandhi, that great soul. The salt from those ancient seas, in the same percent, runs in our veins and our blood that we spill in anger, that we share with each other in time of need. It is in the sweat that pours off of us when we strive to create or destroy. It is in the tears that we taste when we hold and comfort each other. Why do we come together? I guess the easy answer would be for salt, but that doesn't really explain it. That crystal, to see the whole world in that single crystal, Blake, I believe, Ed will correct me if I got that one wrong, to see the whole world in a grain of sand, in a crystal of salt, to know that from the cellular level to the level of the galaxies, we have so much that we are and can be to each other. As we realize ourselves to be riders in this cosmic storm, sitting in the eye of the storm for but a moment together, and knowing that we have to go out there and re-engage it. So we come together in reason to laugh, to cry, to share, to repair from all of those battles that we have fought out there with others and with ourselves, and to prepare for the next engagement in this wonderful thing called life. We come together to wake each other up, to comfort each other so that we can sleep, to turn instruments of battle into instruments of music and heal the heart and make this world a more peaceful world. Out there and in here, they are not separate realities. Our hearts, our homes, our world, they are all linked by invisible bonds, as invisible as music itself.